So let's read, if you will open with me, we're going to look in Ephesians chapter 6. We're continuing on in our series, and it's verse 16 in Ephesians 6. It says this. Are you listening to me? It says, in all circumstances, take up the shield of faith, with which, and I get this part, you can extinguish all the flaming darts of the evil one. And so, not only is it this awesome shield that we're getting, and I like to think of it as a Captain America shield, which is probably nothing like that at all, but it does something really awesome. It extinguishes all the flaming darts of the evil one. And it doesn't leave any room to say a couple might get by, all right? This thing is good enough to extinguish all of these darts. And when it says darts up here, don't be confused by what it means. Have you ever played darts, like the little round thing you hang on the wall and kind of toss it? Remember we did that actually a couple weeks ago, and most of you were really bad at it? There weren't many pros in the room. Those little teeny darts aren't the darts that Paul is talking about in this chapter. Actually, they're arrows, and they were war arrows, so they're pretty long and hefty and had these big, sweet metal ends that were really, really sharp. And we're going to look more at the arrows in a minute, but I don't want you to have this picture in your head of these little throwing darts that you like play with your friends at like Christmas parties or whatever. All right, so this is some serious stuff. Now, first of all, as we dig into this thing, we're looking at shields. So what kind of shields do you think were even used? What do you think Paul has envisioned in his head as he starts his talk with us about shields? Any ideas? What do you guys think of?
Those big Roman ones, you know, the big squares.
The big square ones? Yep. Okay.
Oh, big round ones.
The big round ones, like the Greek?
Yeah.
Greek ones? All right. Any other, like, pictures of shields in your head? Those little teeny ones, right?
Like, what did they do?
Actually, we're going to talk about that. Good. Thank you for bringing that up, V. There were two main types of shields that were used in Roman warfare and most of their enemies at this time. So listen, the first type of shield was a small round shield, and it was kind of like curved in on the sides to protect the guy. And what they would do is they wear it on their left arm. Any lefties in the room? Sorry. You couldn't have worn this. You'd be a loser at the time, but you're not now. Now you're awesome. But it goes on your left hand. And so, therefore, you have to swing your sword with your right hand. So most of them had to be right-handed or just learn how to use it. So if you're lefty, sorry, you would have had to learn how to fight with your right hand. And so you strap this thing on your left, and what they would do is they would fight with it so that, let's say Zach is coming up to me in warfare, and we're off to the battlefield, and Zach comes up and he swings. So as Zach swings, I take, and this thing's strapped onto my arm, so I barely even have to hold it. It's really strong, takes a lot of hit, and won't fall off. So Zach swings, I can block it, and now look, whew, easy shot, right? Because remember, my sword was short. We already talked about the sword was pretty short, so I had to be able to get up nice and close with a small shield, block his thing, come right in, and stab and jab. So that was one type of shield that was meant for quick movement. These soldiers, it was light, and they could move around fast, and they could do really good hand-to-hand combat because the shield was small and very, very light. Now, there's another type of shield, and actually, that wasn't the type of shield Paul was talking about. He uses a different word and describes the other type that they used, and it was, like you said, a big rectangular wooden plank. It was a big, heavy piece of wood, and basically, it was the size of anybody. Let's see, I need a 4.5 foot tall person in this room. Anybody 4.5? You're what? Okay, stand up for a second. Imagine her head's not on her shoulders, okay? There's no head. Okay, take her head off, and then that's about how tall this shield would stand. It was, thank you. It was about 2.5 feet wide. This was a pretty big shield. Now, right away, you're like, these are like big Roman soldier dudes. Like, how would that ever cover them? Well, I did a little research. I didn't know this before, but I found this out. The people, the average person of their time was quite a bit shorter than we are. Like, Adam, he would have been like Superman at the time. Like, he's the Incredible Hulk during this age and this place. They actually ran a little smaller, so their shields could be shorter. Genetically. So, if you've ever gone to, like, England or Scotland, okay, you might have seen some suits of armor and looked at them and be like, those things are like really small. I'm not talking about the decoration ones that you see in houses. I'm talking about actual suits of armor like in museums that ran pretty small. And you're like, how did like a big soldier ever fit in that? Like Matt Woodside would not fit in that suit of armor. It just, they're small. Well, they actually ran smaller. The people were smaller at the time genetically. I think of like King Farquaad, you know, from Shrek. Like it was that, they were just genetically smaller. Same idea. In this region at this time, the people on average, not saying everybody was, but on average, they were just a smaller height person. And so this shield at 4.5 feet in those dimensions were chosen for a specific reason. Because they wanted it to cover their whole body. This shield's main purpose was to protect the entire soldier. And it wasn't just like that small shield that was just kind of for blocking and moving quickly. This thing was massive, and it was meant to cover all of you and protect you completely and totally. And I spit, sorry. So some other cool things about the shield is that it was plated in metal. Now imagine these big, huge arrows flying at you, okay? You're going to want something to protect you to keep that thing going through. So this metal plating would stop that arrow from going through that wood, and it would kind of protect it. But then it also had something else. It had on it this leather. Now here's why it had to have leather. The leather was soaked in a special oil. Now read up here with me. It says, you can extinguish all the flaming darts of the evil one. Is he carrying a shield or a fire extinguisher? Right? Like, how often do you describe a shield that can extinguish things? Like, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Well, it does in this. It kind of was a fire extinguisher. Because the leather that was soaked in this oil, as this flaming dart would come through and hit it, that oil would actually quench or put out that fire. It would extinguish the fire on the arrow so that it wouldn't burn things up. Okay? So this was a very specialized shield that was designed for fighting against fiery arrows. Which is pretty neat. So Paul looks at this thing and says, you know what you need? As a believer in Jesus Christ, if Satan's coming at you with these crazy fiery arrows, you need something that can give you total protection. Yeah, you're out there and you got your shoes are on with the gospel of peace and you're ready to go. You've got your belt and you're dedicated and you're into this fight. You got your breastplate of righteousness on and you're good, but imagine with me that you're standing on this battlefield with just that and you're looking up into the clouds and these like just massive amounts of arrows are coming down, raining down on you. All right? Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, why don't you watch this clip real quick? In a second, once it goes, let me...
And cowards.
Okay. Now, that could be a slight exaggeration. I don't know, because I've never fought against a million soldiers with arrows shooting at me.
Really?
But, yeah, really. But I assume that it might look something like that. Maybe not quite as animated. Now, here's the deal with these shields. Picture with me that this front row right here are, there's not many of you, this front row right here were our shield bearers, okay? They had these huge shields, big wooden planks. What they would do with their shields is they would jam them down into the ground, all right? And they kind of angle their body underneath these things to hold them. And what the shields would make basically is this big wall. You form the front wall of the army. So as you're facing the other army, let's say you guys are an army, they're an army, you face each other, your job was to be this protective wall so that if they shot arrows at you, bing, 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 they'd all fall off. And you guys behind could all be there with your bows and arrows, aiming over the top and shooting at them, right? And you guys back here have some swords, and so that as you guys inch closer and closer and slam your thing in, shoot some arrows. Go again, another wave, slam your shield in, they shoot some arrows. You keep inching closer to these guys, and all of a sudden you all with the swords back there would run through the center and be like, quack, 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 ching, ching, and you'd attack and be close enough for hand-to-hand combat. Now here's the strategy that they used. Plant the shields in front. Why? Because they're really, really important. You guys drop the shields down and say, hey guys, what's up? You're all dead. All right? You're going to get shot with arrows. It ain't good. You are super important in this battle because you're the one protecting from these arrows. And without you, guess what? They can have all this armor on. They're still going to get these arrows rained down on their heads and look like Swiss cheese by the end of the day. Okay? It's not going to be good. So the arrow, I mean, not the arrows. They were important too. But these shields were extremely, extremely important. We can see why Paul, in that case, would choose to talk about the shield and he compares it to our faith. So as he compares this really important piece of armor to our faith, I wonder why he chooses it to describe this thing. Let's look at the arrows for a second. Maybe that would give us a better clue. And these arrows, like I said, weren't little darts. There are these big, massive war arrows. They had these metal tips on them. They were super sharp. Then they would take this cotton-like material and soak it in pitch. You guys know what pitch is? Like, you ever see the junk that comes out of trees? Not like syrup, but similar. No? You guys know what I'm talking about? Same type of stuff, right? It was used to make this stuff called pitch that they would light on fire. It was super, super flammable, which means it catches on fire really easily. And they would soak this cotton in it, and then they'd put it on the end of the arrow, so then when they shot the arrow, it would hit your sword. Well, let's say, not your sword, your shield. Let's say it hits your shield, and when it does, that moist stuff on the end would splatter, kind of like I do when I talk, all right? And so all of this little tiny fires would all of a sudden ignite on all the people around you because it splattered off of you. Or if it hit, it came over here, hit Jordan, oh, she gets hit, it splatters on all her friends. So now these little fires start all over the place, okay? So it's not just Jordan getting whacked by this arrow, but all the people around her are burning. And this stuff that they, this liquid that they used on the end of their arrows would burn really slow, but really, really intensely, really hot. So it would slowly just burn you and incinerate you until you eventually just completely caught fire and you were consumed.
Or you put it out.
You could try, but it was hard to put this stuff out unless you had that oil, which was on your shield. Hence, another reason why the shield's really, really important. Okay? Now, Paul talks about what Satan does to us as those arrows. Now, it's interesting that he uses that concept because when he talks about sin and he talks about the ways that Satan's trying to attack us, it's like these little teeny fires that as they hit, they're not just like going to hit you here. They're going to hit you and then they're going to spread. And they're going to grow until they eventually consume us. And usually it's little things that we kind of picture them as little darts in our life. And we forget the reality of just how powerful and dangerous these weapons are that Satan's using against us. For instance, pride, how it starts so small. But just like that fire, it begins to grow in us and well up until it completely consumes us. And we're somebody we don't even know who we are anymore. And things like doubt. Or these little lies that he whispers into some of our ears and says, you're no good. And nobody likes you. You're worthless. You have no friends. Or maybe he's whispering like, you're the best. Everybody loves you. Now you should be worshipped. Or maybe we're some of those people that say those things to other people. Maybe we're speaking those words and slinging these arrows ourselves at other people. Maybe it's lust. Maybe it's doubt. Maybe it's selfishness or jealousy, gossip. Maybe our tongues just tear people down. I don't know what these arrows are that Satan is slinging at us. But as they hit us and we think that they're these small little darts, Paul's like, these are arrows that are going to eventually consume you completely until you're just destroyed. They're not little things. They're so dangerous that you need to have this amazing shield in front of you that only God can give you that's called faith. And without faith, guess what? You're standing completely on that battlefield just alone. You got nothing. You're facing this army that is looking at you right down the little crosshairs there going, you're done. And you're just like, uh-oh. And you know what? That would be Satan's greatest, greatest accomplishment. To look at your life as a believer and say, yeah, I took you down. I convinced you that that lie was true and you bought it. Hook, line, and sinker, you bought into that lie. And then it consumed you and destroyed you. Paul says you need to have the shield up in front of you as you engage in this real battle that's taking place all around you. 1 John 2:16 says, for all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life is not from the Father, but it's from the world. Now listen, Satan loves to use these things as his arrows. Things that your eyes look at and think are so pretty or enticing or interesting. The things that your flesh desires or just our own pride of who we are and who we think we should be. And he loves to take those things and just fan the flame until eventually we're consumed by them. And I'm not sure what things might be your weakness tonight. What area Satan is targeting on you as he pulls back on that bow and just looks at you down his sights and says, I'm going to get you with this one. But Paul is absolutely convinced that each of us face these things and that we need something to protect us as we engage in this fight. So then why does he call this shield the shield of faith? What does faith have to do with any of this stuff? Hebrews 11:6 says, and without faith, it's impossible to please him. For whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. So here's the deal. Tonight, if you've come to this place and you're like, I'm a believer and I want to draw close to God, I want to know him, there's two things you've got to do. It's really clear in Hebrews. First, you need to believe he exists. Duh, right? Like, why would you want to know somebody who you don't even believe exists? It's kind of stupid. So that makes sense. But here's the second part. You need to truly believe that he rewards those who seek him. So that as you draw and try to draw near to God, that you actually can, and that there's access for you to get to know this amazing creator who made you. And that he'll reward you for that. So as you seek him out, it's possible for you to actually seek him and know him. That's where we sometimes have problems. Because the first part, knowing he exists, I think that's why we're in this place, or at least a lot of us, because we know God exists. But faith is about more than just knowing he exists. I mean, even Satan knows that. Even the demons shiver when they think of the name Jesus. But it's more than knowing facts about God or knowing that he exists. It's knowing that this pursuit of God is actually worth it. That the things God tells you are worth listening to and actually obeying. And as you believe that, you act on it. So as you seek him, you're rewarded for seeking him. But sometimes we have this like horrible concept of what faith is. And you know, it's really important. Throughout the Bible, it continually repeats the phrase, the just will live by faith. We see it in Habakkuk 2:4, Romans 1:17, Galatians 3:11, Hebrews 10:38. It's just all over the pages of the Bible, this reminder that if you want to live for Christ, you have to live by faith. If you want to know God, you have to have faith. And a lot of times we don't really even understand what faith really looks like and what it should be in our lives. And faith should be our life. So what does this kind of faith look like? Let's look at that for a second. And just like that shield, it actually like protects and defends us. Our faith should do that same thing. It should be active and it should be alive. Now here's a question for you. Why are you sitting in that chair?
Because I want to know more about God.
Okay, well that's good. Woo, she took it deep with me. Why did you actually sit in it though?
Because I trust that it won't break.
You trusted it won't break, or that it wouldn't? How did you know it would break? Maybe it would spring up. Maybe I'm just a mean youth pastor. I put a spring. All right. Or how many of you guys got in a car today at some point and it drove? Okay, you had faith and you trusted that that car wouldn't just explode when you got in it. Right? Somebody didn't put a bomb under it and you blew up. Okay? How many of you guys are right here right now on the second floor of a big cement building? You're trusting that this thing isn't just going to crumble all around us and crush us to death. Right? We're putting faith in stuff all the time. Faith is alive and active all around us, and we underestimate what it is. To live means to have faith. If you're living right now, you're having faith all over the place and don't even recognize it.
I have faith in you.
Thanks, man. You're probably not worthy of it. But listen, why would we want to put faith in things that don't matter or that will just end up hurting us? When it's so clear to us, if we're believers, where our faith belongs, where the actual payoff is. I saw this illustration in this magazine. It was a picture of this guy. Anyone know what an earth mover is? It's like this huge, huge bulldozer. It's like massive. And he's standing in front of his bulldozer or earth mover. And the caption read, let me read it. It says, I call her faith because she moves mountains. All right? Now, it's cheesy. It's funny. But listen, I know it's cheesy. But here's the truth behind it. He believes that when he gets in that thing, it's going to be able to move some stuff. It's powerful. If it's really that powerful, it better be able to move some stuff around. We say we believe in the creator of the universe, the controller of every molecule and atom in existence, and yet sometimes we don't believe that he's worth us obeying and modeling our lives after. If he's that powerful, where's the faith to say he can really do this? Sometimes we sit back and we doubt this huge, amazing God, but we say we have faith in him. I was reading, anyone read the Reader's Digest ever? No? Me either very much, just when I need stories. There's a story of a town in Kansas. All right, I was reading, and the people were getting sick a lot, and they couldn't figure out why they were sick. And so eventually they needed to do this like water project in their water system, and they had to drain the tank to update it. So they go in and they drain the tank, and at the bottom of this water storage tank that was feeding this whole town that's sick, they found all these dead animal bodies. And so these people are just drinking the water away, thinking it's great water, it's good, you know. And as they're drinking it, they're getting sick, not knowing the whole time that it was contaminated by these dead animals that had gotten sucked into this thing and were trapped and died. So my question to you is this. Does everything deserve our faith?
No.
Does it matter at all what we put our faith in?
Yes.
Because I hear often that as long as we have faith in something, or as long as we just believe, that we're going to be good to go. The trick of life, the key of life, is that we believe in something. Have faith in something. Find a cause. Find something to live for, and then that's success in life. I hear it all the time. I don't know if you guys do. If you don't, listen up, because it's being said all over the place. And I'll tell you, Satan is coming with these arrows, and the arrows are things he wants us to believe in and grab onto that are contaminated and they're poison. And the second we place our faith in those things, we're not placing our faith in the one that does give us truth. And he starts to tell you those things I said before as he whispers in your ears about who you are. About how you're worthless, about how God doesn't deserve this or doesn't love you or whatever the lie might be that he whispers in your ear. And as we grasp on and believe that, it's like drinking that contaminated water. And, you know, God's bigger than that. He deserves us to go, wow, you really are worthy of my faith. So much that I'm not going to just say it, I'm actually going to do something about it and live it out. This guy named Oliver Wendell Holmes said this. He said, it's faith in something that makes life worth living. This guy wrote it in a book. Faith in something makes life worth living. You want to know why life is worth living? Have faith in something, anything. It doesn't matter what. I'll tell you what, that is a lie. That is an arrow from Satan trying to convince us, because here's the deal. Faith in the right thing is what makes life worth living. Faith in the one who created and knows the best, that's what makes life worth living and worthwhile. There's this little boy who played. Anybody play Little League ever in their lives? All right, some of you. There's this little boy who's playing Little League, and he was on a horrible team. He got stuck in this bad team, and they were losing all the time. So before one of his games, he's all down, and he's like putting his uniform on. He doesn't really want to go, and he's like dragging his feet to go out the door. And his mom's like, what's wrong? He's like, oh, I don't even want to go to my game. And she's like, why don't you want to go to your game? He said, well, we're probably going to lose. And she said, well, that's no way to talk. You guys have great chances. You just need to get out there and you need to try hard and have a good heart and go be, just be more positive. And so he looks up at his mom and he goes, Mom, I'm positive we're going to lose our game. All right? Now, we do that. Like, it's funny that he did that with Little League. That's great. But as we look at our Creator God and go, hey, I know this isn't truth, but I'm just going to grab onto it and act like this is truth and let it change my life instead of what I know is truth. The one that I know is truth, that I say I believe in, yet where's the change? Where is it that I'm acting out and actually saying I believe in it? Therefore, I'm going to do it. There's going to be a change in me. There was this missionary, his name is John Patton. Anybody know John Patton? Everybody ever hear of him? He was a missionary to the South Sea Islands. And he was over there, he's trying to translate the Bible into their language, and he's having the hardest time figuring out a word for faith. like faith or trust or belief, any of those words in their language, he couldn't figure it out because they just didn't seem to have words like that. They didn't talk that way or use those type of words. And so as he's trying to figure this out, he's sitting in his little hut one day and he's just sitting there just thinking and steam's coming out of his ears, trying to figure out what this word could be. And as he does, all right, this island guy comes running in the house and he's like huffing and puffing and he's so tired because he had just run down the road. And as he comes in, he plops down in the chair just in front of John. And he just rests for a second. And he goes, man, it's good just to throw my whole weight right into this chair and rest. And bing, it was like this bell went off in John's head. That's it. That's the word I've been looking for to try to describe faith in their language. And you know what? I think that's a great definition for us as we try to figure out what this faith means. It's not a list of how much stuff I know that God is good and God is great and he doesn't lie and he does. That's good. You know facts about him. But are you like this guy? Are you able to take your whole weight, your whole life, and just throw it onto God and say, if I really believe that you're everything and that you know best, I'm going to actually do it. I'm going to throw my whole weight and my whole life onto you. So if you tell me to sacrifice everything in my life and go to China, I'm going to China. If you say go to Africa, I'll go to Africa. If you say sell my car, I'm going to sell my car. If you say stop hanging out with those people and start hanging out with these people who need friends and have nobody, I'll do it. Whatever you say, God, is what I'm going to do, no matter what it looks like or what it is, because you really deserve it. We have a hard time doing that. God, I love you as long as you don't tell me to do anything that's different from what I'm doing now. God, I love to go to youth group and I love to go to my church on Sunday morning and I love to play in my band and I love to do this and that and this to serve you, but don't you dare ask me to do something to change what I'm doing and what I love. That requires too much faith. You see, real faith, this description of faith that's active says if you really believe it, you better be willing to do it. If you really believe he's right, you better be willing to act on that. So how is this faith in God my shield? How does it actually protect me? I'm going to read you a few verses. Romans 4:3 says, for what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. So as we believe and act out on the things that God's teaching us, that we know about him, it's counted to us for righteousness. We get to know our God better. And look at 2 Corinthians 1:24. It says, not that we lord it over your faith, but we work with you for your joy. Get this part. For you stand firm in your faith. How do I stand firm? In my faith. This thing called faith is what allows me to stand up in this battle. And Psalm 12:6 says, the words of the Lord are pure words, like silver refined in a furnace on the ground, purified seven times. This is some pure stuff. This is pure. These are pure things that you'll ever hear more than what your mama or your papa or your grandma or your papa or whoever else that you trust in your life, your best friend, your BFF, could tell you. You can trust the words of God more than anyone else in your life. I don't care how much you trust them or think you do. God's words are more trustworthy. And so we can listen to this and then act on it. 1 John 5:4. I skipped one. Psalm 18:30. It says, this God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord proves true. He is a shield for all those who take refuge in him. And we can hide behind him because if we know what he says is true, we truly believe, there's that faith, we believe that it's not just true, but he's going to act on it. We're able to change. We're able to live for him and say, God, it's more than just words for me. It's my life. I really believe you, so here you go. Tell me what to do. I'm acting, I'm moving, I'm living out this faith that you have given to me. 1 John 5:4 says, for everyone who has been born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world. Get what the victory is. Our faith. You want to be able to overcome the world? Believe in the big God who's given you truth and act on that truth. Because if what he told you is really for your best, as you do that stuff that's for your best, you're going to be overcome in this world. 1 Peter 5:8-9, the last one I want to share is one we've seen before. It says, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. We've read up to that point. This is the next part. It says, resist him firm in your faith. You want to resist Satan? You got to have faith. You got to believe that your God really is bigger and that he really does know what's best. But beyond that, you got to be willing to act on it. You got to be willing to say, if you said it, I'll do it. 1 John 5:10 says, whoever believes in the Son of God has the testimony in himself. Whoever does not believe God has made him a liar because he has not believed in the testimony that God has borne concerning his Son. So here's the deal with this. If you believe in Christ, you're believing the words of God and saying it's true. And every time we act contrary to what God tells us is true, you're calling God a liar to his face. God, I know you said this is best, but I don't believe you. You're a liar, so I'm going to go do this because Satan's dart told me, hey, try this instead. God, you're a liar. And I don't want to make God a liar. I don't want to look up at this all-powerful, all-knowing God who loves me enough to die for me and say, you don't know what you're talking about. You're a liar. And so I choose sin, and I choose laziness, and I choose busyness, and I choose all these other lies that Satan's put in my life. I choose them because I believe those things and Satan more than I believe the God who loves me and created me. That's what this verse comes down to say. And you know what? I don't want to be in that spot. I don't want to look at my Creator and have to say that. So I want to close with this. To truly have this faith that we're talking about, we have to do more than just come to this place. We have to do more than just put on a Christian t-shirt. We have to do more than just play the Christian game. We have to do more than just act like we're Christians and feel good about ourselves. We have to actually say, I believe what you say so much, it's changing my life. No longer am I going to just sit and be happy and selfish with myself. I'm going to share your word with people and use my gifts to minister to the people around me. And I'm not going to be a lazy Christian anymore. I'm taking the shield of faith that's going to protect me from these lies, and I'm going to live out the Christian life because I'm tired of being some bum Christian. I say I believe it, I'm going to do it, God. Now, I was out hunting, and I was with a buddy, and there's a stuff that you use to like cover your scent, or at least I use it to cover my scent. And Matt knows what it is. It's doe pee, okay? And I don't think you're really supposed to use it to cover your scent, but I do. And so, yeah, I know, it's gross. It's called a buck bomb. Everyone ever seen a buck bomb? You like push the button on the end. Robbie knows. Robbie, how does a buck bomb work? Yeah, it does. But how? You got to push it's an aerosol can. You push the thing down and then it's just like, it shoots out kind of like a bomb. So anyway, I let one off, kind of like where I'm going to hunt. And, it like fell over, so it looked like it was all completely gone. It's doe pee, you know, so you want to be sure. So I mean, like, it looks like it's almost done. And my buddy's like, yeah, it's all good. I was like, all right, give it to me. I'm gonna throw it away. I was like, you sure this is all done? Because I don't want to waste it. And he's like, yeah, I'm positive it's all done. I'm like, how positive are you? If I hold this in your face and then push the button again, is it gonna go off? You know? And he's looking at me like, uh-oh. You know, I'm like, if you really believe it, you'll let me push the button. He's like, uh-oh. So he never did, because who's going to want dopey in their mouth? It's gross. So anyway, the deal is he never would. Now listen, if we really truly have faith in a situation like that, where we totally believe, we're able to act on what we believe because we believe it. It doesn't make sense to be like, yeah, I believe it, but I'm not going to actually do anything about it. So why do we approach our God that way? Why do we approach the Creator of everything and go, I doubt what you said is actually true enough for me to do something about it in my life? I challenge us tonight to stop playing around. Stop dabbling in Christianity and actually say, I believe enough. Here we go. I'm joining this ride. I'm going to have the faith to say something's going to be different about me, and I'm starting tonight. Will you bow your heads with me? Father God, we love you. Lord, I just thank you for all the precious people in this room. Christ, that you love so much. God, I just feel so often that I don't deserve your love. I don't deserve you to look down and be so patient with my just dumb things I do all the time, but you still love me. And Christ, we thank you that you've given us this faith to be able to believe in a big God who does what he says. And Christ, I pray that you touch each heart that's in this room tonight, hearing your word, that your truth would pierce us. So that when we leave this place, God, that we could start in this moment, start saying, we're living out this real, true, active faith. God, we don't want to just say it. We want to believe it so much that we act on it. Lord, I just pray we'd put you first above everything else. We love you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.